Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Why does the 21st century Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints not share the same enthusiasm of the 19th century Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints when it comes to the Journal of Discourses? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today to discuss this question is my colleague, Eric Johnson. We have spent the past several days looking into the background of the Journal of Discourses, a collection of 26 volumes of sermons given by Mormon leaders, primarily Brigham Young, but other Mormon leaders as well, during the 19th century. And we're trying to find out why is it that the modern LDS Church is not as excited about the journal as obviously the 19th century church was. And so we've been going through showing that these were not put together by just anybody in the Mormon church, that these were put together by competent leaders in the Mormon church, leaders that we would assume could understand and recognize true doctrinal teaching, at least from an LDS standpoint, and would not have allowed a lot of speculation or a lot of false doctrine to creep in to this very well respected at the time set of sermons by Mormon leaders. What we find in Volume 1, there is a letter from the First Presidency in Volume 1. And what does that say, Eric?
Yeah, at the very beginning of this Volume 1, it says, "Dear brethren, it is well known to many of you that Elder George D. Watt, by our council, spent much time in the midst of poverty and hardships to acquire the art of reporting in phonography, which he has faithfully and fully accomplished. And he has been reporting the public sermons, discourses, lectures, etc., delivered by the presidency, the 12, and others in this city for nearly 2 years, almost without fee or reward. Elder Watt now proposes to publish a journal of these reports in England for the benefit of the saints at large and to obtain means to enable him to sustain his highly useful position of reporter. You will perceive at once that this will be a work of mutual benefit, and we cheerfully and warmly request your cooperation in the purchase and sale of the above-named journal and wish all the profits arising therefrom to be under the control of Elder Watt." And this is signed by the First Presidency at that time, Brigham Young, Heber C. Kimball, and Willard Richards.
So again, these are no slouches in Mormon history. I mean, Brigham Young was the second president of the Mormon Church, the most powerful leader the Mormon Church has ever had, in my opinion, held that position longer than any other leader of the Mormon Church. And he is encouraging people to buy the Journal of Discourses as they are produced, because remember, they were being published over a period of time. Now you can buy the entire set because they stopped publishing them in the 1880s. But the reason I bring that up is they were very excited for members to have a set of the journals back in the 19th century. We also find, as I mentioned earlier on another show, that the Deseret News, owned by the LDS Church in 1963, March 21st to be specific, ran an ad in the church-owned Deseret News again urging members to buy the journal at the church-owned Deseret bookstore. And in that ad, it said every Latter-day Saint should take this opportunity of owning the written words of remarkable teachings from the LDS pulpit to the clear and vigorous exposition of Latter-day Saint doctrine is added the unmistakable authority of divine inspiration. That's not really the attitude we hear now, is it, Eric?
No, no, it's not. And in fact, we were looking at one of the critiques of those who use the journals and basically had said that George D. Watt, you know, was getting paid. And here it mentions that, of course, mm-hmm. but there was no, it wasn't payment so that he could misreport what exactly was taking place. He was a faithful Latter-day Saint. As Brigham Young stated, this was of mutual benefit. The church benefited because the people in England were going to be able to read in detail some of the teachings that were coming out of Salt Lake City. I can't imagine how long it took for it to finally get there, probably months before they would get it, and I'm sure people were waiting for the ship to come in so they could read it. But certainly, Watt did make money, but it was not the main purpose of this.
No.
Both of them were benefiting.
And absolutely. And we can't even imagine that Brigham Young would put in the hands of an incompetent person such a responsibility. That's not the way it was. And yet when I talk to many Latter-day Saints, if you ever mention the Journal of Discourses, they kind of roll their eyes like, oh, you know, I was just reading on a Facebook page the other day where this young lady was trying to say that, oh, it's full of speculation. It's just full of speculation. Where is she getting that? I have to wonder, has she ever picked up a copy of the Journal of Discourses? Has she ever read any of the volumes at all to draw such a conclusion? Or did she hear that from someone else?
Well, and I brought this out earlier in the week that I doubt most Latter-day Saints have ever even seen a copy of any of the 26 volumes and the index that comes with it.
Much less read them.
Exactly. I mean, if they do have them, how much have they actually looked at? But yes, they had to get that from somebody, probably one of the Mormon apologists who don't like some of the teachings that are in there and don't want you to consider it to be authoritative.
Well, if the Deseret Book was saying that includes unmistakable authority of divine inspiration, why isn't the Deseret News and the Deseret Book of the 21st century saying the same thing? I think that's a question that Latter-day Saints have to give us. And I think Latter-day Saints owe us an explanation as to why the church was so excited about the Journal of Discourses in the 19th century, and today they would much rather we don't even look at it at all. As you pointed out, that statement from BYU professor Stephen Robinson, it's basically just ignore them. Even though the Mormon Church is very selective in what they quote from the Journal of Discourses, they do quote from the journal in their correlated manuals, and as we've mentioned before, some of the leaders have often cited the Journal of Discourses in their sermons.
Well, wouldn't you consider that to be disingenuous to say, well, you can't trust it, but then in their own manuals, as we pointed out earlier in the week, and even in the last April 2012 conference, this is being quoted. It just seems like either it's accurate or it's not, but if it's not, then you shouldn't be quoting anything from it.
And it's funny about that, because the Mormon Church loves to quote where Joseph Smith mentions how a prophet is only a prophet when he's acting as such. And yet he said that to two people, okay? Two people visiting him from Michigan. This is who he says it to. And yet at the same time, you have Brigham Young who teaches Adam is God from a general conference pulpit, and that is ignored. And in this last conference, they go after that statement about Joseph Smith not being a prophet all the time. You would think if consistency mattered, the latter, the Adam God sermon, would carry much more weight than what Joseph Smith said to two people in his house. But that's not the way it works in the Mormon Church. Why? Because Brigham Young has made a statement that embarrasses the modern Mormon Church, and Joseph Smith gives them some plausible deniability. So they attach themselves to that quote. George Watt made some statements in the preface to Volume 1. What did he say very quickly?
Yeah, he wrote to the Saints Abroad, and in the second paragraph of this, right after we have the letter from the First Presidency in the introduction, it says, "It affords me great pleasure in being able to put in your possession the words of the apostles and prophets," capitalized both of those, "as they were spoken in the assemblies of the saints in Zion, the value of which cannot be estimated by man, not so much for any great display of worldly learning and eloquence, as for the purity of doctrine, simplicity of style, an extensive amount of theological truth."
And never does it say inordinate amount of speculation.
Not at all. So I see key words here.
Right.
Doctrine, simplicity of the style, and theological truth.
Mm-hmm. Now, he goes on in that another paragraph. He says, "To those who are unacquainted with the doctrines of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who are mantled in the darkness of ages, whose minds are sunk in the almost impenetrable shades of error, uncertainty, and doubt, but who sincerely desire to know the truth, these sermons will prove a source of light, information, and joy. And according to the vocation which belongs to the eternal priesthood, all authorized ministers of God will hail their publication with gladness. For such an embodiment of doctrine will greatly accelerate the grand object they have in view, the salvation of souls, the instruction of saints, and the building up of Zion in the last days. As I mentioned earlier, Eric, they sound pretty excited about this, don't they?
Oh, they do.
Why don't we see the same excitement in the Mormon church today? Why do they want us to ignore, basically, what was taught in the journal? Why do they want us to ignore the basic teachings of the leadership during the 19th century? If these men, these prophets of the living God, are really getting their information directly from God, why are not modern Latter-day Saints just as excited about the teachings of past leaders like Brigham Young and John Taylor and Wilford Woodruff? Why are they not as excited about their teachings today as they were excited about them back then?
Well, Bill, maybe you could go over some of the teachings that were in Volume 1 of this. I mean, there were some incredible teachings.
I want to, and we're going to do that tomorrow, because there are so many, I could not cram it into the last couple minutes that we have left in this. I think what we need to do is to challenge, if you're a Christian listening to this, I think we need to challenge our LDS friends whenever they question the authority coming forth from the sermons that are found in the Journal of Discourses. We need to ask them why they are not as excited about these teachings as they obviously were excited about the teachings during the 19th century. Why did the Mormon Church encourage people to buy the Journal of Discourses as they were being published during the 19th century? Why were they encouraged to buy the set of the Journal of Discourses as late as 1963? The Deseret News put an ad encouraging people to buy it. Why don't they do that today?
I'm not going to say this. I don't even know who publishes this website, but for those who want to follow us in the next few days, as we're going to go through some of the journals, you can go to www.journalofdiscourses.org, and they have all of the Journal of Discourses, all 26 volumes, word for word. In computer, you can just you can follow along with us, and I think that would be eye-opening, perhaps for some Latter-day Saints who may have never heard some of the things we're going to say, if they doubt what we're saying, to have them look right on this website.
They could even go to our website, because we have the Journal of Discourses on our website as well. All you have to do is go to mrm.org and just go search Journal of Discourses, and you'll see the same thing pop up. In fact, I've done a comparison sometimes, and I noticed that our electronic version is when it comes to page numbers, is even more accurate than the one that you just cited.
Okay. Well,
so you want to be careful about that as well. But yes, we are going to go through some of the volumes of the journal. We're not going to go through all 26 volumes, but we are going to examine what was it that they taught back in the 19th century that they were excited about that Mormons are probably not excited about today.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. When trying to understand the doctrines of our Latter-day Saint friends, family members, and co-workers, it can be very difficult to know what to believe. In his resource titled, In Their Own Words, A Collection of Mormon Quotations, Mormonism Research Ministry's Bill McKeever compiles some of the very best Mormon quotations that will help you better understand what LDS leaders and scholars have said on such issues as atonement, exaltation, and pre-existence. Written in an encyclopedic format, In Their Own Words provides quotes on literally dozens of issues, alphabetically listed for quick reference that can be found in a matter of seconds. No more wondering what Mormonism's leaders have said on any topic, and this resource is available in both book format as well as on CD disc. Just load the PDF file onto your computer and you're ready to do valuable research. These are the very best quotes that Mormonism Research Ministry uses on a regular basis. In Their Own Words is available now at mrm.org. Again, mrm.org. Get it today.